Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. Since election night 2016, the streets of the U.S. have rung with resistance. People all over the country have woken up with the conviction that they must do something to fight inequality in all its forms. But many are wondering what it is they can do. In this series, we'll be talking with experienced organizers, troublemakers, and thinkers who have been doing the hard work of fighting for a long time. They'll be sharing their insights on what works, what doesn't, what has changed, and what is still the same. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
I'm Alejandra Gomez, A-L-E-J-A-N-D-R-A, last name G-O-M-E-Z, and co-director at Living United for Change in Arizona, Lucha.
All right. And so you were at the rally and counter-rally outside of Trump's infamous talk on Tuesday night in Phoenix, right?
Right.
All right. Yeah. So, yeah, start out. Tell us how it went from where you were.
Yeah, so I'll actually start from when we heard about the pardon. Mm-hmm. So we heard that 45 was coming, and we heard very quickly after that he was thinking of pardoning Arpaio. And we had a couple of our young leaders with us during the staff meeting, and immediately there were reactions to that, because a lot of those young people actually worked in the broad coalition during the Basta Arpaio campaign to get him out of office. And for us, all of that work, we demonstrated that voters no longer wanted a criminal in office. And after the election, finally the judges ruled that Arpaio was found in contempt of court and completely defying the judge's orders to stop profiling and targeting communities of color, Latino immigrant communities. And to us, that was what we knew to be true all along. What the horrors that our families were experiencing. Finally, Arpaio was deemed a criminal and was taken out of office. So to hear that the President of the United States was going to come and pardon the criminal reinforced what we already know. And what we felt during the campaign trail, that this president had been igniting division and hate during the campaign trail, and now emboldening in his administration racism, bigotry, and white supremacy. And so there was a lot of nervousness going into the Trump rally, and one of our young people, when we were huddling before going to the rally, said, "I'm scared to go to this rally because of everything that I've been seeing, because of what happened in Charlotte, and it feels terrible to be scared of the President of the United States." So after that, that was a very sobering comment, and we said, "Well, we've been doing demonstrations for a really long time, and our community is resilient. Our community knows how to fight back. And we're going there today because we need to show this administration, because this administration has targeted every single community, Muslim, women, immigrant community, LGBT community, transgender community, that we're standing in solidarity and we're against this agenda." And so we went, and it was a wonderful celebration of all of the various communities coming together to demonstrate together and to push back together on this president. And the community coming together saying to our president, "You need to follow the rule of law, and you need to listen to the voters, and you need to listen to the judicial." And it's a very terrible and backward time when we are having to tell the President of the United States to follow the rule of law and listen to the judicial system, because he's gone completely rogue. And so we were at the rally, and folks were really chanting, celebrating. It was a wonderful display of all of the wonderful things that our community has been fighting for in terms of equality and justice. Toward the end of the night, police officers were in full riot gear. It was completely unnecessary, yeah. One, because you had peaceful protesters. We've built a relationship with the police department. We've had several actions and have shown that we know how to run effective, strategic demonstrations.
Yeah.
And to see that they were out in their full garb of riot gear with the masks and the shields and layers of vests on, their guns, rubber bullets, cop cars everywhere. I think that was more menacing than the Trump supporters.
Yeah.
And toward the end of the night, there was still differently abled community there. There were still women with their children there, fathers with their children, family members there together. And the police deployed tear gas into the middle of the street because they wanted to keep the crowd safe, separate. And you just start to see community run everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no warning. Shortly after that, I think someone threw a water bottle. And because of that water bottle, mind you that the police are in all of their riot gear, they felt threatened by a water bottle.
Yeah.
Started to deploy rubber bullets. And the light bombs, I don't know, I'm not sure what those are called, but they're meant to blind people. And I mean, it was a war zone. It was a war zone that was initiated by the Phoenix Police Department. Increasingly, we are seeing this militarization of the police department. I mean, we have seen it in other states. And to experience it here in Arizona, where we have had marches with thousands of people, I mean, our state is no stranger to targeting of our communities, to raids. And this was the first time that I had seen such a violent and aggressive display toward peaceful demonstrators.
Do you think it had something to do with the fact that discussing Arpaio and his possible pardon was on the agenda, or would more likely like after Charlottesville?
I feel like we've seen it. I think there was another demonstration and the police are coming out with a lot more. I've seen them in SWAT gear in the SWAT department in a previous action. And so I feel like slowly there's this trend of an increased police state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think yesterday was the full coming out of it. One of the things that I know to be true from the experience yesterday is though Charlottesville happened, and that's a terrible, tragic incident where we lost a powerful freedom fighter, Heather.
Mm-hmm.
The right was, the extreme right, the white supremacists, were not met in the same way that peaceful protesters were met here.
Right. Yeah.
And this was not directed at all. Phoenix PD did not direct anything towards the right. It was all towards the peaceful demonstrators. And the falsification of the story and the changing of the incident that was also it was a blatant lie. And to see that Mayor Stanton and Chief Jerry Williams were complicit in that cover-up just shows the absolute lack of leadership.
Give us a little background on Arpaio and on the things that he need, the things that make him require a pardon in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So, very early on, Arpaio is the type of person that he always wanted to be in the media. And anything that really got him media attention, he would do. So Ted City was one of the worst ideas that could possibly happen, a complete violation of human rights and prisoner rights. Mm-hmm. And what would happen in Ted City is in Arizona, the temperatures reach about 120 degrees at any given time in the summer. You have prisoners outside with no air conditioning, or you have like people that have been incarcerated outside with no air conditioning. There's outhouses for bathrooms. So all of the feces and urine and everything is stagnated. So you have that smell. You also have like everything that's accumulating in terms of bacteria and all of that among the people that have been incarcerated. And on top of that, Sheriff Joe would make it known that he felt people that were in jail should not receive any type of what he would consider food as a luxury. And so he would often give moldy bread and green bologna to people that were in Kent City. And so people had also passed away in the jail because of the harsh conditions. And that's just Kent City. The other piece is, under his jurisdiction, there were smaller cities like Surprise, Arizona, Guadalupe, Arizona. These areas were largely Native American and Latino populations. Mm-hmm. Well, in Surprise, Arizona, there were a number of rape cases that were being reported, and the sheriff of young women, of little girls, and the sheriff was failing to investigate those rape cases. Mm-hmm. Millions of dollars of misappropriated funds. So this is all before SB 1070.
Right.
Then the raids started to happen, and Arpaio completely revamped all of his vans, and basically it looked like an immigration, worse than Border Patrol, would have if you see an illegal person, report them. Pictures of people, just very, it was a terrible sight to see his vans. Outside of his office, he had a big military tank. And so all of that is like, why does a sheriff need a military tank also? And that goes back to the misappropriation of funds. But
yeah,
Arpaio would go into people's homes, neighborhoods, supermarkets, the flea market, anywhere, the shopping malls, anywhere where there were communities of color, Latino communities in particular, he would go in and conduct raids to do roundups and detain and deport people. Mm-hmm. And so this separated thousands of families in Arizona. And it, during SB 1070, you saw, which was the Show Me Your Papers law, you saw this mass exodus of just people moving to other states or going back to Mexico. So not only was there the misappropriation of funds, the terrible dehumanization of people that were in jail, and the uninvestigated cases of children, child rape, but this constant dehumanization and targeting of one community. And so all of that really built up this persona of who he was, not only here in Arizona, but across the nation. So for Arizona, when we had the election where Trump actually became president, for us it was such mixed feelings because we had just taken him, taken Arpaio out of office, but elected a national Arpaio into office, which was Trump.
You know, people have been talking about Trump's sliding poll numbers and why he would want to pardon Arpaio. And so I wonder what the reaction has been from your organization and others who spent all this time organizing against Arpaio to this idea that, you know, Trump can just pardon him to win points with his base.
Our reaction is that he needs to pardon the victims of Arpaio. Mm-hmm. And we're not shocked that this administration and this president would continue doing the things that he promised during his campaign trail. It was very clear that he had a white supremacist agenda and that he was going to do everything in his power to embolden white supremacy in this country. And he's sticking to those promises.
Arizona is an interesting state for a lot of reasons. You guys played a pivotal role in the healthcare fight with John McCain finally casting the deciding vote to not repeal the Affordable Care Act. You're going to have an upcoming messy Senate race, I assume, in 2018. Give us a brief sort of rundown of the overall political scene in Arizona right now, and what's giving you hope for the future?
Yeah, Arizona is very much, there's a lot of changes happening. So we're in a red state, and a state that has been anti-immigrant for years, and no one was paying attention to communities of color and building political power within communities of color. And within undocumented communities. We as organizers and a coalition of organizations said, well, we're going to do that work ourselves. And so alongside of the mass mobilizations and the powerful marches and displays from the community and organizations that made those happen, there was voter registration that started to take place within our neighborhoods. And nobody was going and talking to our families about registering to vote and why their voice mattered, and why they needed to cast their ballot. And so we started that work in 2010, and that work has continued until today. And so where we saw 4% turnout rate in 2010, we saw 22% turnout rate this last election. Mm-hmm. And that shift in politics and moving from being also Maricopa centered and now really working in other counties like the Pima County area, now working in Yavapai as well, starting to think about, you know, we're really thinking statewide along with all of the other politics that are happening. Mm-hmm. In Arizona, there has not been, or I think across the country, there has not been a Senate president at the legislative level, state legislative level, that had ever been recalled. And we were told, don't do it. Mm-hmm. Because Latinos didn't have enough power. We weren't going to be able to recall the Senate president that was a co-author of SB 1070, the Show Me Your Papers law.
Right.
And we were able to do it in 2011. And so with that voter registration, with those demonstrations, with our families learning the importance of showing up at the state capitol and going and demanding justice from their local representatives, their municipal representatives, and their federal representatives, we now have a city council in the city of Phoenix that is largely Latino and is progressive. We also, at the federal level, for years, and the congressional level as well, we have Ruben Gallego and Grijalva in strongholds of major areas of highly dense Latino population and community of color.
Yeah.
And so we have a vulnerable feat, which is the Nextali race. So she's somebody that has to really be careful with how she votes as well, because that her district can easily flip. Mm-hmm. And we're paying attention to that race.
Yeah.
We have the potential, depending on how McCain is thinking of if he continues or not due to his health. Mm-hmm. This makes the first time in history where one state has two Senate seats open, with also Flake. And there's a lot of folks that are thinking of those seats right now, and really looking to them. But Flake has really, he has really turned a corner because of all of that political power that we are starting to build. And he understands that he's dealing with an extremist party that is no longer the good old boy Republican politics of the past. This is an extreme white supremacist agenda. And he just released an article where he really calls out his party for not having a sign on the backbone. And so that pressure only happens because in his office, and we have been doing the voter registration, and we have been telling the stories of the community and really pushing him. And he understands that he's vulnerable now, because in the past, we weren't doing the work of voter registration, and the community might not have been paying attention, but it's a politics of a new day. Arizona passed a minimum wage ballot initiative with paid sick days.
Yeah.
I mean, in a worker rights state, that is so powerful. That impacted close to 1 million people.
Yeah.
In the same year that we also were able to take out our pile. So this state is definitely changing.
How can people keep up with you and with Lucha?
So if folks go to luchaaz.org, they can find us there. That's our website. My Twitter handle is Gomez_Alex07. And then my Facebook would be Alejandra Gomez, and that's how folks can find me.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe, with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.